We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's happening, guys? Welcome to the Laker Film Room podcast. Today, it's Mike Trudell and Darius Soriano. Is that our last names for some reason? Darius, I'm in Milwaukee. I will be gone for a long time. The Lakers have started their, I don't know if it's the longest or second longest road trip of the season, tying out one from the end of January. And we learned today, or got confirmation earlier this morning, that LeBron was not going to play against Milwaukee. And the strong hint of that was that he was downgraded to doubtful last night due to the ankle. I think the way I would describe this is just the ankle has been bothering him clearly for a while now. And on a couple of previous back-to-backs, he's done something similar where, you know, I think that the focus is getting him back and ready to play against Memphis, which is going to be a quick turnaround back-to-back. Team's going to get in very late to Memphis tonight. And LeBron actually missed the previous game that the Lakers played against the Bucks, which was on Friday, March 8th. And that one was not a back-to-back, but he got the additional rest and played against the Timberwolves on Sunday. So first off, Darius, chances that the Lakers can do this again against a Bucks team that they beat by one. If you recall, D'Angelo Russell hit 9 threes in that game, which was a huge reason why the Lakers were able to win that game. And Chris Middleton did not play for the Bucks in that one.
We're doing my three things preview right here on the pod right now, because these are all ideas that I'm hitting right in that piece, actually. And so just a quick note on LeBron, Mike. This will be his 10th game missed this season, and his fourth that will either come on the front or a back end of a back-to-back. Now, this will be the Lakers.
Lakers are what, 5-4?
I think so. And they are, and this is their 12th of 14 back-to-backs this season. So there are two more back-to-backs this season, including one to close out this road trip. And so this may not be the last time we see LeBron miss a game this road trip, Mike.
They're 5-4. Just double-checked when he's out.
Yeah. And so LeBron is on pace, Mike, to play the most games he's ever played for the Lakers. His previous high was 65 in the championship season, which was cut short, as everyone knows, to 72. I think the Lakers played 72 regular season games that season due to the COVID shutdown. So I think that they've been managing LeBron well this season, and whatever they've done, continue to do it. And I don't mind him strategically missing games here or there. In getting to the Bucks matchup, the Bucks are a different team than the one that the Lakers beat. And the Lakers struggled to beat them that last game. It was a great game, and D'Lo went crazy, and AD played really well. But Middleton's been a difference maker for Milwaukee, Mike. And I am super interested to see how the Lakers combat this version of the Bucks that has a true second side action player and a guy who can even commandeer possessions for himself. Middleton's only played three games since that March 8th matchup, and they've come in three of the Bucks' last four games. But when you look at his averages, he's averaging 18 points, nearly seven rebounds, and nearly eight assists a night. He's been a difference maker for them. And so I'm curious to see how the matchups go. I'm curious to see who the Lakers start against Milwaukee. The last time that LeBron sat out against the Bucks, they started Spencer Dinwiddie. Dinwiddie had that crucial block against Dame down the stretch, but he did not play well offensively, but he is coming off of his best offensive performance of the season in the Lakers win over the Pacers. So Dinwiddie's in an interesting place too. And so how do you see all of this coming together against the Bucks with LeBron out, with Middleton back, and maybe with Dinwiddie riding a certain wave recently?
Yeah, the Dinwiddie point is certainly key, especially having him coming off such an excellent individual game and one that includes a certain amount of usage. Although that changes a little bit just with the way with like Russell back and with LeBron out, you know, nonetheless, I think you still could really have the fact that he can get downhill, you know, against a team like this and try to collapse the paint some. It's just that they have, you know, they have some real rim protection in there, of course. But, you know, so did Indiana in a way when you go from Miles Turner over to Brooke Lopez. To stick on LeBron for a second, though, Darius, you know, I was looking at we were just doing a big thing about how when Russell was out, right, the Lakers were 0-5. And as Pete had mentioned, I teased at the start of the game. Well, maybe Spencer Dinwiddie, though, makes up for some of that, which the Lakers didn't have in the previous five games that D'Angelo Russell didn't play. And there you go. Like, the Lakers did win that game. Part of it was because of Dinwiddie stepping up. When Anthony Davis doesn't play, the Lakers are 1-4. And, well, okay, this when he doesn't finish the game, right? So this includes the Golden State game where he played the first quarter. They were up by six. They end up losing. And the Lakers had lost the previous three games. The one they'd won was the crazy game in Boston. So clearly there's something about him that they just absolutely cannot replicate. Now, going 5-4 without LeBron, to me, part of that is some of those games have been against lesser competition. Part of that has just been that I think year 21 LeBron, when he doesn't have that full level of being able to defend to at least to a minimum and be able to create a certain amount offensively, that is like there are parts of the game where they can get by with that. Of course, they can't replicate LeBron when he's playing well. There's no doubt about that. But I think that, okay, LeBron's out. Everybody knows they have to step their game up. When LeBron is playing, there are some times where his teammates, and this, by the way, is not a fault of LeBron, but his teammates can think, oh, LeBron's out here, we good. You know, and they play at a certain baseline that is not high enough to beat a good NBA team. So it's that alertness, Darius, that you just feel even at any level. If you're getting off the bus and your best player is not playing, you're like, all right, not only is it time for me to step up some, but I have to. Because if I don't, then this team can't win. And that's it's not the same with Anthony Davis, because guys can say that all they want, but they're just not going to have the baseline level of rim protection and defense and to survive without Anthony Davis. And they at least have enough creation and to survive a night and try to get a win. Forget about the Bucks for a second, and we'll just address that. But like, I think the Bucks are going to present a lot of challenges, especially after the Lakers just beat them, especially with getting Middleton back, the rhythm that they're in, all that. But just the LeBron being out, I think that explains some of the 5-4 relative to what they were without D'Lo or without Anthony Davis.
So I certainly agree. I think it's a combination of a bunch of factors, just like you mentioned. Your point about no one can replicate LeBron when he's going hard, like foot to the pedal LeBron is still a devastating force around the league. And no one on the Lakers is going to be able to replicate that at all. What I will say, though, is that on a possession-to-possession basis, the ability to do what LeBron does just in terms of like managing an offensive possession, initiating a set, setting a screen and rolling and occupying a defender. There are other players on the team that can do those sorts of things. The Lakers have a bunch of offensive shot creation from their three guards. And even with Rui and with AD, there's a lot of usage there that can be absorbed. And while no one is going to do it exactly the way that LeBron does it, Dinwiddie or Austin or D'Lo are certainly capable of bombing in a few threes. AD and Dinwiddie and Rui are certainly capable of attacking off of the dribble and getting some baskets inside. And the defensive ability that LeBron brings on a possession-to-possession basis, I think, can be picked up by other players. But the level of force that he can play with on both ends when he is 100% going hard, no one can do that. I think in a game like this against the Bucks, what you're hoping for is for everyone to marginally increase their usage, everyone marginally show that uptick in effort and defensive intensity, and hopefully as a whole, cumulatively, they pick up for 80 to 90% of what LeBron is, and maybe even like 100 to 110% of what LeBron is at like a baseline. Like, I'm just sort of like not floating, but, you know, managing the flow of the game version of LeBron.
The one difference maker that I would say, and we both already referenced it, it being Chris Middleton, but why is it the big difference maker? So when Middleton was out in the last game these two teams played, Milwaukee started Jay Crowder. And Jay Crowder, you're perfectly fine just playing smaller against. Like, he's not going to kill you on the offensive glass. He's mostly going to space out from three. He's not going to make plays for other people on the weak side. And if that player is instead Chris Middleton, and now you have to have either Dinwiddie or Russell or Austin Reeves guard him, that's tough. Because I think Dinwiddie is going to have the best chance, but he's still just going to be able to hit his little turnaround midi. If you bring any help over, he had 10 assists last game to lead the Bucks. And like, that to me is where the dam might break a little bit in trying to deal with it. Because if you have either LeBron or Rui to deal with that on top of Giannis and then Brooke, wherever AD is spaced out to, that's one thing. But with Middleton in there over Crowder, that's a pretty big difference in level of player.
100%. And this is where I allude to this in three things, but this is also where players like Max and Cam and Prince are going to be important for this Lakers team in this specific game. It wouldn't surprise me if the Lakers actually started Prince. I would still go with Dinwiddie here, but
yeah.
Prince has enough size, and Middleton is the type of player that Prince can sort of stick with a little bit. I do think that Middleton's ball handling and ability to play in pick and roll is a challenge for a player like Prince, whose defensive versatility is not as wide. That said, having those wing defenders to sort of throw at Middleton, to throw at Dame during the middle portions of the game when the teams go to their bench looks, I think is going to be important if the Lakers are going to win this game and compete. So let's go to break here, Mike. And when we come back, we can hit the Bucks a little bit more, but I also want to transition into the rest of this road trip.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
So any thoughts about that defense, Mike, just with the wings before we get into what the rest of this trip could look like?
Yeah, I mean, my major thing with the Bucks, and just I want to zoom out for a second here, is like the Lakers were able to at least somewhat contain Giannis last game. Like Dame didn't do anything crazy. And I think they're the type of players where, okay, we just lost to you in your gym, and that's not happening a week later in our gym type. Like that, this is the baseball series part of it, or the same thing I think is a challenge when the Lakers go to Indiana later this week. There's just a mentality. Like if I lose to you in the first game in ping pong, I'm definitely not losing the second one. Now I probably wouldn't lose to you in the first game of ping pong. You are a lefty, you know, but I know that's a sport that I play a little bit more than you. Darius is chuckling in the background. You can see that I'm talking that smack. I think that Giannis to me is the five alarm fire heading into this one. And how much do the Lakers have Anthony Davis, you know, trying and sticking with Giannis or staying back or having somebody else like Rui go out to Brooke Lopez as a spacer? Well, last game, they mostly had AD stick with Miles Turner and let Pascal Siakam just brutalize them behind that line of defense. And I was going to kind of kick that back to you in terms of a coverage. And I'm not sure that you can get away with having Anthony Davis out on Brooke Lopez with what Giannis is likely going to be wanting to get up to for a team that their last home game, they beat OKC 118-93. And Giannis had 30 points on 18 shots with 19 rebounds. And like that type of line to me is what I would be most concerned about.
Yeah, I do think that they will start with Rui on Giannis, to tell you the truth, and just to see what that goes like. This is another game, though, Mike. If you recall the last time that these teams played, Darvin went to two big looks some, and he played AD with Jackson Hayes some. And so if the Lakers get to those groups, I would imagine then Hayes sticking with Lopez or basically allowing AD to defend Giannis, whoever else is on the court. Right. And so if that means that it's Giannis and Bobby Portis, then maybe Hayes is on Bobby Portis. Right. Or if it's Jay Crowder, then maybe Hayes is on Jay Crowder. It's just something to keep an eye out for, because it's not a look that Darvin goes to a lot, but it is a look that he goes to when he plays a team that has front lines the way that the Bucks do, right? And so he's done it against Minnesota and he's done it against the Bucks. And so I do agree that the AD Giannis matchup is the matchup to watch. And that goes the other way as well. If AD is scoring well and he's in a similar rhythm and flow to what he was against the Pacers, then he can sort of match nuclear Giannis basket for basket in his own way, right? And so that will be the pivot point of this game. And as we said, with LeBron out, everyone needs to step up. And we sort of take it for granted that AD is going to do it, but he will need to do it this game.
All right. No matter what, it's going to be tough. And then the Lakers have to go to Memphis. And I think if you look up at the standings and you see Memphis, and it's like, well, they're not good this year. Everybody's been hurt. Ja got hurt super early in the year. And then they have basically been playing some level of a G League team on top of the occasional Luke Kennard or like whoever on the actual NBA roster is able to play. But I've been quite familiar with Gigi Jackson. And like, there's just all these different Memphis Grizzly players. Vince Williams, like there's guys that you're just not used to seeing. And, you know, the Grizzlies have not been playing great. Like they've only won 3 out of their last 10, but they did get Desmond Bane back. First of all, I respect somebody that comes back and doesn't just say, hey, shut down my season. There's 10, 11, 12 games to play. Like, I'm just going to get ready for next year. He's like, no, I've got over the ankle injury. I'm healthy. I'm playing. And I think that makes a big impact on your offseason and then heading into next year, hitting the ground running. So I respect that. And it's also to say that with Desmond Bane back and Jaren Jackson Jr. still playing, the Grizzlies can absolutely beat you in their gym, especially on the second night of a back-to-back. So this is, to me, trap game would be a little bit strong, but this is where I think they're absolutely going to need the LeBron energy going into this one. So I just wanted to say that about this, Darius, but let me zoom out a little bit on this trip and first give you the context that I've been tweeting about. If people are kind of like, why is Mike obsessing so much about the if the Lakers do this and Phoenix and Dallas and Sacramento? So the bottom line is the Lakers are most likely at this point still going to be the 9 seed. Now, Phoenix lost a game last night at San Antonio without Victor Wembanyama that makes the case for them catching Phoenix a little bit more palatable. And I'm going to leave Dallas and Sacramento out of it for now, Darius, just because they're still four games up essentially in the loss column. And if one of them, they play twice, if one of them beats the other one twice, then we'll have this conversation in a little bit more detail. But for now, if the Lakers go 9-2, Phoenix would have to go 6-4. To avoid the Lakers passing them. If the Lakers go 8-3, Phoenix would have to go 5-5. If the Lakers go 7-4, Phoenix would have to go 4-6. And if the Lakers go 6-5, Phoenix would have to go 3-7. Phoenix's schedule, Darius, at Denver, at OKC, at New Orleans, Cleveland and Minnesota at home, New Orleans at home, Clippers at home, at Clippers, at Kings, at Wolves. It's about as tough as it gets, as it can get. Not a single bad team on there other than, well, I guess the Clippers are sort of playing like a bad team, at least right now. They just got their butts kicked by the Pacers at home with Indiana back-to-back. But other than that, are you seeing this path? And as I introduced the Lakers game, like at Milwaukee and at Memphis, like the Lakers don't have an easy schedule necessarily either. So there's a lot of stuff going on here. What's your takeaway in the Lakers' attempt to try and get to the 8 ahead of Phoenix?
So first things first, Mike, let's look at the Lakers side of things, because while I do want to dive into the Suns, I want to put that to the side for 1 second, just because the Lakers are starting a 6-game road trip and they have 8 road games left overall. The Lakers are 12-20 on the road, Mike. And as a quirk of this season's schedule, where they ended up hosting one of the in-season tournament games rather than having to go on the road because of their record, they're only going to play 40 road games this season instead of 41 road games. So they're 12-20. They've got 8 road games left. They are the only team currently in the top 10 of the West that has a losing record on the road. Now, in theory, if they go 8-0 on the road to close the season, they'll be 20-20 and finish 500. I do not expect that. And so when you're talking about these scenarios, they all start with what the Lakers record has to be first. And finding ways for the Lakers to get to 9 wins or 8 wins, which I think 8 wins is pretty much the floor for me in terms of where I think the Lakers can be. I think if they only get to 7 wins, if they go 7-4 over their last 11 games, they are very likely to host the 9-10 game. I'm looking at this from the Lakers' perspective first, Mike, and just, can they get their act together on the road and win some of these road games? And it's a tricky stretch here. Like you mentioned the Milwaukee-Memphis back-to-back, but the Lakers are zigzagging a bunch in this road trip. I'm sure you are not necessarily happy about the number of plane hours you guys are going to spend in the air, because to go from Milwaukee all the way down to Memphis, then back up to Indiana, and then go east to New York. Brooklyn. Yes. Then only to go west a little bit more to go to Toronto. People think Toronto is like on the Eastern Seaboard. It's actually closer to Detroit than it is to Brooklyn.
As a quick anecdote to that, I was born in Buffalo, New York. I moved to Minnesota when I was 1, so I'm a Minnesotan, but my mom's whole family is still in Buffalo. And Buffalo is just across the Great Lakes from Toronto. And it is really far from New York City, to the point where if somebody's from New York City and you say you're from New York and you're actually from Buffalo, they give you like the eye roll, like, bro, stop. Like, you're not, no, you're, it's like if you're from, you know, east of San Francisco and you say like, yeah, I'm from like LA, like, and you wouldn't do that because San Francisco's right there, but that's sure. how far apart these things are. Yeah.
Definitely. And so to go from Indiana to Brooklyn, then from Brooklyn to Toronto, and then Toronto back to Washington, DC. This is not a friendly road trip in terms of travel for for the Lakers. And again, a couple of back-to-backs stuck in there. It's a 10-day trip because you guys traveled yesterday for this Bucks game, but it's 6 games in 9 nights with 2 sets of back-to-backs. If the Lakers are going to make a push, it starts on this trip, Mike. And I am intrigued. I'm a little bit concerned, but I am hopeful that they get their act together based off of how well they've been playing and the level of urgency and spirit that they've been playing with in these games. But no one knows this better than you, Mike. You go on the road and it's a juiced arena because there's a ton of Lakers fans there. But that juiced arena also translates to the home team having that little extra bounce in their step. And even if they're not a great team, like the Wizards are not a great team. You mentioned Memphis. They're not a great team. Toronto's not necessarily a great team. Those teams will get up to play the Lakers. And so let's go to break here, Mike. And on the other side, I'd love to hear your comments on that idea. And then we'll get back to the Suns part of this, because I do think the Suns are the team that the Lakers need to have in their crosshairs.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, one thing I want to say to start, the Lakers, I look at them in almost two different ways. And when they were still playing small, which was essentially through like late January, and having it be either Torian Prince or at times Cam Reddish. And Darius, if you're a longtime Laker Film Room listener, and I know that there are many who have talked to me about this in arenas this year, this has probably been the thing we've talked the most about this year, the big lineups versus the small ups and all that. And the Lakers have not been as bad as the road record overall would suggest since they made that shift. Now, they haven't been amazing, but like if you look at the double OT win at Golden State, you know, then they lost the Houston Atlanta games, but we know that AD didn't play in the Atlanta game. And then they beat Boston, they beat New York, they beat Charlotte to finish out that trip. And it's like, oh, okay, there's some decent momentum. Well, since then, there hasn't been a road trip. There have been one-offs. Like Lakers went to Phoenix for one game. They played at the Clippers, quote unquote. They went to Golden State for one game at the to start the second half. And remember, LeBron didn't play in that one with the ankle. They went to Utah just before the break. They won that game and played well. And then since that Golden State and Phoenix games, the Lakers have been on the road for one game for the whole entire last month, and that was at Sacramento. And that was the game that, speaking of people that have listened to LFR for a while, I have been bitching about ad nauseum. And behind the scenes, I will just bring it up in the text thread sometimes randomly. Will I not? About how frustrating that night was.
This is your trade deadline. So, like, these are your trade tweets, right? It's just like, for the old people who took SATs, this is the Darius's trade tweets are to Mike's tweets about or texts about the Sacramento game. So,
I mean,
yes, it does come up.
Let me just pitch about it one last time, and then we'll put it to bed. Even if the Lakers had simply just won that game, right, the one that they it was circled on the calendar and they had played well, they would now be 40-31. Sacramento would be 41-30. They would just be a game back of them instead of 2.5, and they would be one game back from Phoenix in this whole thing. So just that game alone was what I had based a lot of the Lakers getting up to the 8 on. It didn't happen. The point that I wanted to make, though, is Darius just laying out the road scenario, is that they haven't been bad on the road, aside from that Sacramento night. And so Do I think they can rip off some wins? Yes. But this is where the starting at Milwaukee and then on the back-to-back to Memphis is tricky. And then having to play an Indiana team that they just beat that's going to be queued up and running all over the gym, that is a tough way to start it. And like the flip side of that is at Brooklyn, at Toronto, at Washington, all those teams are struggling right now and just don't have a lot of talent. Toronto's super injured. Brooklyn has taken a big dip. I think, you know, Dinwiddie, that helps going into that game, right? He was on Brooklyn the last time. Now, so, and then Washington, we know what's going on with Washington. So those are three nice road games to get. And I think that, like, could you say a 4-2 trip, would that be successful? Yeah, all things considered. But Darius, if you only get to 4 wins out of this trip, that means you basically have to go 4-1, I think, at worst after the trip. At worst.
Or go undefeated, because we are talking about scenarios where the Lakers, if they go 9-2, if they go 8-3, if you burn 2 losses, then you're like, okay, are we going to win the rest of these games? Well, it's a tricky proposition.
Yeah. Even if the Lakers do play really well and win 8 of their final 11, all Phoenix has to do is play 500 ball. And yes, they have a really difficult schedule, but they've got Kevin Durant and Devin Booker and Bradley Beal. Now, Yusuf Nurkic got hurt. He hurt his ankle in their last game, and that doesn't help them. They're having to start Drew Eubanks and then, you know, not really have another big that they play off the bench. So it's a, like, that makes it a little more palatable. But like when I'm looking at this schedule, all things considered, and a lot of this has to do with the last game at New Orleans, which is a 12:30 game, local time start. All right, wait, sorry, that's 12:30 LA time. Okay, so that's a 2:30 Midwest start in New Orleans. That's a really tough game, especially if the Lakers have to then think they're 100% going to be in the play-in, of course, after that game. And if they have to devote full resources to winning it, that's just tricky. The only thing that could save them in that one is if New Orleans is locked in to either the 4 or the 5. And the way that they're playing versus the Clippers, they very well could be locked in, because they're not neither of those teams is getting up to the 3. And neither one of them, I guess the Clippers, if they really dip and Sacramento gets hot, could go further. But I think most likely is that New Orleans could be locked into the 4. And then that changes that game completely. Then they may be resting. But I don't know, Darius, like, they may say, screw the Lakers. We're not, we're going to knock you out.
They are not the
Lakers
friends.
Right.
They are not the Lakers friends.
And they have the pick. And even though I think they're going to defer, so let's, I'm getting ahead of myself though. I want to, the thing I want to focus on for a second here is Phoenix's schedule, because we just went through what LA's is. I think that like 8-3 is possible, difficult though, and 7-4. If we were just looking at it, I think going game by game, then maybe I'd come away with 7-4. But of course, that's without knowing who's going to play in which game. For example, we didn't know LeBron wasn't going to play in tonight's game, and that kind of changes the outlook as to the possible the outcome, I should say. Now, getting back to that Phoenix deal, Darius, you've got it up on your laptop right now, and it's tough. But like, what is a reasonable expectation for a team who, you know, Frank Vogel is going to have this very clear to Durant and Booker to start? Hey guys, like, you saw the Lakers just won 4 of 6 on their road trip. Are you guys trying to go play in the 9-10 game? Because if you lose this game tonight, that's what's happening. Like, they're going to be just as amped up, is my point, as the Lakers are, to avoid this scenario.
Oh, man. So it's tricky, though, Mike. It's like, when I looked at this upcoming stretch for the Suns schedule, I had included the 2 games that they played against the Spurs. And so they split the games against the Spurs. What I was looking for was for the Suns to get to 3 more losses than what the Lakers had, right? And now that number is actually only 2 more losses, because they're only, the Lakers are currently going into the Bucks game 2 back in the loss column from the Suns. Now, after tonight, that could change. But the key games to me were those 4 games that the Suns were going to play against the Spurs, because they play the Spurs twice, and the Clippers, because they play the Clippers twice. And my goal was for the Suns to split both of those, right? And so if they go 2-2 in those 4 games, look at the rest of their schedule, Mike. Denver, OKC, New Orleans, and they play New Orleans twice, Cleveland, Minnesota twice, and Sacramento. You just talked to me about how being at a team twice in that close of amount of time is difficult. Yep. They've got four of those, Mike. So they just split with the Suns. If they split with Minnesota, if they split with the Clippers, and if they split with New Orleans.
Yeah, they have all three of those teams twice. Yep. Home and away.
So if they split all of those games, that's four losses for them out of that stretch.
Yeah, touche.
And it's not out of the question that they could lose twice to any of those teams, depending on how the matchups go and who's available for both teams and everything else.
Just significantly to me, the fact that they get Denver and OKC now in these next two, as opposed to like the last two, Denver and OKC are still jostling for the one.
That's right.
And I think they both want it. And so these are not, you know, rest games by any means. They play in their last game is at Minnesota. And that is, well, we'll see. Like that could very well not be a rest game for Minnesota either, if it's 1, 2, or 3 on the line. Although, you know, I would say it's better though to get Minnesota in that game than it is on one of these next two.
Mike, Minnesota is 1.5 games back of Denver, who is currently 1, and 0.5 game back from Oklahoma City, who is number 2. Them wanting to get to the second seed is important for them too. If they're looking for a trip to the conference finals, potentially, home court in the second round is what they should be looking at as well, not just home court in the first round, which they've already locked up, right? So there's a lot on the line for all of those top three seeds. All of these teams have a lot to play for, including the Phoenix Suns. Do you think the Suns want to fall to 9th? No, of course not. They'd love to be in 7th. And not even in 8th, where they have to be on the road for the first playing game. So there's a lot at stake for all of these teams. But I believe at this stage, now that the Spurs are off of their schedule, I'm pretty sure that the Suns have the most difficult schedule left in the league.
100%. There's no possible way, right, that it's not. They play the top three teams in the West, 5 out of those games. And then their easiest opponent is the Kings. And their second easiest opponent is the Clippers. So I guess depending on because New Orleans right now is like percentage points ahead of the Clippers. Yeah.
Their last games are all against the West top 6 seeds.
Yeah. Minus Cleveland. And Cleveland, we'll see if they have Mitchell back by then, but they just got Mobley back.
Yeah. And Cleveland's a top 3 or 4 team in the Eastern Conference. And there's a tricky team because they've got a bunch of size, which is Phoenix's kryptonite to a certain extent. Look, the Suns are the team to watch. The Suns are the team that the Lakers have the tiebreak over. All they need to do is finish with the same record as the Phoenix Suns. The Lakers are in a bit of a bind. They've got a lot of road games left. They have not been a great road team, but their strength of schedule relative to the Suns is much easier. They are in a position to not control their own destiny, but they can look at the Suns and say, the Suns are not going to go 10-0. They're not going to go 9-1. If they do, then hats off to them. But the Lakers are going to be in a position, Mike, where maybe it does come down to the last game of the season, but it's going to be a close one, I think. And Phoenix's schedule is difficult enough where I am rooting for the other team. And that loss against Wemby-less Spurs could be the one that comes back to haunt our boy Frank.
And just to put this back on the Lakers, though, to close this out, Darius. If we're talking about the Suns not having that much room for error, the Lakers have less.
Yes.
So they can't be losing one of these games to a team that, you know, they on paper, when the Lakers are playing well in LeBron, like that they should quote unquote win. And Milwaukee does not count in that one. Like tonight, Milwaukee is favored. And so if the Lakers can find a way to win, boom, then we're having this conversation with even a little bit more optimism from a Laker perspective. But if the Lakers lose the back-to-back at Memphis, it's not happening. You know, it's just going to take one game like that, and it's not happening, like where you're asking Phoenix to go to just have to win 3 games or whatever. Yes. Out of their 10. So and by the way, how much does it matter? I mean, a lot. Because it matters a lot, because if the Lakers get to that 7-8 game instead of the 9-10, that means you win one road game and you're the 2 seed. as opposed to having to win a home game just to have to win a road game to be the 8 seed. And I think Denver's going to get the 1 seed. So it's to me, it's quite important.
I was into the Hoop Collective Pod, and Brian Windhorst has coined the term the Dreamers for Lakers fans. And it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but he's looking at those playoff scenarios and the chance for the Lakers to get out of the Denver bracket, potentially, if they make the playoffs at all. The only way that that's even on the table, Mike, is if they get into the 8-7 game. Because if they're in the 9-10 game, then they can only be the 8th seed. And if Denver controls their own destiny to get to the 1 seed, then that could be their first round playoff matchup, the Lakers. Like, they could end up playing Denver. Whereas if they get in the 7-8 game and Denver is the 2 seed, then the Lakers, they would control things to a certain extent. The Lakers know what they have to do, and it involves them winning as many games as possible. And we'll be watching the Suns on our second screen, Mike, to see what Phoenix does on a night-to-night basis. And so we'll be back. Today is Tuesday. We may be back tomorrow, or we may come back on Thursday to wrap up both the Bucks and Grizzlies game. But until then, you've listened to the Laker Film Room podcast, and we will catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double-teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic, got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Rebound to Vlade. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his 8th block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston. Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Ready pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two, one.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. It's over.
Shot clock now to 5. Bryant.
Yeah.
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Bad insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.